Monster Man, Episode 305, Hutakon and Karakara.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Humanoids section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. But before we do that, it's time to thank a new Patreon supporter. That's right, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $5 level, you'll get, in addition to the opportunity to choose a topic for a special episode of Monster Man, access to my other show, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the Deities and Demigods supplement for AD&D and talk about using religion and mythology in your fantasy RPGs. So thank you very much, Steen Struppian, for your support. It means a lot to me. Okay, before we get started, I try to take these supplements, it sounds like medicine, but I try to look at these books in light of their historical context. One thing that I've consistently said about the critical perspective here is that I'm not here to call out any particular author, any particular creator, but to look at the books in the context of the cultural trends that informed them. So we can look at the Chinese mythology section of Deities and Demigods and say, this needs to be better than it is, without saying, like, hey, Jim Ward, you dirty old racist. Like, I'm not saying Jim Ward's a racist. I'm saying that the attitude of American or English-speaking cultures toward Chinese mythology is such that the sources that Ward had to work with were, you know, patchy and biased and inadequate, and that tells us something about the way in which Chinese culture is othered in America and in the English-speaking world generally, and certainly more so in the late 70s, than it is now. And that's important to bear in mind as we take a look at one of today's monsters, because, I mean, I try to maintain a certain level of critical detachment, but hoo boy. Now, the monster about which I say hoo boy is not the first of today's monsters, the Hutakon, H-U-T-A-A-K-A-N, the Hutakon. These guys, anyway, they're pretty good. I like them. They are one of the many species of kind of animal-headed or animal-featured humanoids that appear in this book. There are a lot of them. Apparently, the perceived gap in the list of D&D humanoids was animal people. And you know what? That's actually, having said that, I'm currently running an Old School Essentials game, and indeed, one of the monsters that I created for it was kind of an animal person. So, apparently I'm not immune from that trend. The Hutakon, I have no idea how you're supposed to pronounce this name, so I'm going to make a joke out of it. The Hutakon are tall, slender, jackal-headed humanoids. They're sort of patient and stealthy and observant, and I like this, they are the remnants of a long-vanished empire. And within this setting, they live in their empire was in the region that is now the Grand Duchy of Karamekos. I like that their society is very dominated by ritual. They have a lot of clerics. They are kind of ruled by their priestly caste, and they're a peaceful people with few warriors. Wear kind of long, somber robes, and they remind me a little bit of the portrayal of the Welsh in Chesterton's poem, The Ballad of the White Horse, where they're depicted as these kind of dignified, mournful remnants of a civilization that is sort of no longer what it was, but who are, and actually the Romans as well, but who are striving to uphold the dignity that they think, you know, is fitting to them as the inheritors of this great civilization, which they themselves are unable to maintain in the face of kind of the barbarians who have come after them. And apparently in the scenarios where they appear, this is what you get, that the kind of haughty Hutakons in conflict with more aggressive human neighbors, with the ability to have peace sort of made harder by their snooty, superior attitude to these primitives. One of the things that I think is really interesting, you know, in a lot of these monster entries, we are not given a very detailed information about their cultures. Just a few lines, at most. And it's nice when those lines give us an interesting picture of that culture. And that is the case here. There's a wonderful quote. It says, quote, "They're a haughty, callous race, dominated by their priests. However, they see themselves as a sensitive, civilized, intellectual people suffering as a result of their cultured nature." I really like that. Probably one of the most informative things you can say about a community, I mean, insofar as you can describe a community with that kind of broad stereotype, is to tell the reader the difference between how that community perceives itself and how other people perceive it. And that could be as simple as, like, I say I'm family-oriented, you say I'm clannish. I say I have a balanced attitude toward life, and you say I'm lazy. I think that's a really interesting one, and I quite like the Hutakan, particularly because they are jackal people, but they're not particularly jackal-like. They don't have any of the characteristics that we would associate with jackals, right? They're not greedy or treacherous. However, now we move into the next one, the Karakara. Now, mechanically, if we were to just look at the stat block, the Karakara is basically a sort of an orc. They're big, burly, kind of slightly pig face. They got like little tusks. They live in tribal societies. They're ruled over by kind of priest kings. And they're members of like a pig cult. They sort of worship pigs, or they regard them as sacred anyway. You know, I mean, nothing particularly exciting there, but not terrible. But once we start to get into the cultural trappings, I don't know any other way to say this. The presentation of the Karakara is racist as hell. I mean, it is always astounding to me that this kind of stuff went through, it was 1986, sure, but this went through, you know, multiple layers of people. Someone wrote the description, and someone drew the picture, and someone edited the book, and, you know, presumably someone at TSR signed off on it, and no one thought, it was a bit much, isn't it? And it just goes to show the extent to which the cultures and communities of people, in this case, the Karakara is like a stereotype of, like, a Pacific Islander, so people from Hawaii or Tonga or Samoa, or maybe even from, like, New Guinea, or, you know, so very much like the cannibal king with the big nose ring. He's got, you know, sort of war paint on, and he's got a sort of decorated club. And he, you know, you can imagine that in a cartoon he would be about to put some missionaries into a pot. And it is, you know, it's a testament to the fact that those communities were sort of not thought of as being real to the people writing these. These stereotypes come from a generation of colonial adventure fiction, which treats those places, those very real places, almost as though they were fantastic places. As if they were, you know, mythical islands in a mythical sea inhabited by mythical people. And the images of those cultures are very divorced from everyday experience. You know, they're either presented in kind of like an anthropological, exotic sort of way, or they're presented in like the Night of the Tiki sort of way, you know. And not that there's anything wrong with either of those things. It's just when they become the only representations of a culture, then we start to get a problem, right? If they existed as part of a balanced breakfast, as part of a wide variety of different presentations of Pacific Islander culture, that would be one thing, but I think it is probably very much the other. And again, I don't think that anyone went through this process thinking, let's create an offensive depiction of Pacific Islanders. Those are just stock tropes that are available within the genres of adventure fiction that this game is to some degree derived from. And if you're not paying attention to those things, then you can replicate those tropes unintentionally, if you like. I don't like to say unintentionally. Let's say, carelessly, without really thinking about it, because those things have become so commonplace in our collective imagination that we no longer really think about what they really are and what they really mean. And it's important to be clear that when I say that people don't intend to create these images in a way that's reductive and dismissive and hurtful, I don't think they intend to do that, but that doesn't mean they shouldn't stop. I mean, and like, in the scenario, I think these guys are from X8 Drums on Fire Mountain, and in that scenario, a werebore turns up in like the settlement of the Karakara, and because they're members of a pig cult, they worship him as a god. And this is very much, again, it's a stock adventure fiction trope about the primitive natives, and the first kind of pseudo, in this case, European person that they encounter. They worship him as a god, in this case, because of the weird coincidence that he's a werebore and they're members of a pig tribe. But like, I mean, come on, you know? So it's tough. One wants to view the material in its appropriate historical context and to focus one's attention on the broader cultural trends that inform these things, rather than specifically calling out any one writer or artist. You know, I don't know that that's productive. But at the same time, let's not have the Karakara as they are written. Let's maybe draw a line under that one, you know? Now, I mean, I think you can't, there is probably something salvageable in the Karakara. I would just ditch all of the kind of, you know, ditch the whole kind of like pseudo-Hawaiian sounding priestly caste, ditch all that, and just have them be a kind of orcish type of creature that have this sort of pig totem or boar totem. And, you know, and you can use the symbolism of the pig for that, right? On the one hand, pigs are the fat, jolly animals, sausages and bacon and so forth. But on the other hand, boars are actually quite fierce and aggressive animals. So there's a certain kind of duality there. And you can have kind of jolly, chubby ones, and you can have fierce, tusky ones. And I think there's something in there that works. You just have to kind of scrape off all the color and really get down to the bones of the monster before you have something that isn't, intentionally or otherwise, replicating these othering, exotifying portrayals of the cultures of this, you know, the South Pacific. Anyway, I am not an expert on this topic. I have purely a layman's knowledge and interest in these cultures. I've read a few books, I've been to a few art and museum exhibits. That's far from making me someone who's in a like position of authority to speak about it. But I think in a way that serves to underline what I'm saying when I say that even I, who know nothing about these matters, who'm not equipped to speak about this kind of cultural criticism, but even I can see that this is something that let's not do that. Now, having said that, in our next episode, well, actually, we've got a special episode. I'm sorry for this pattern. I always do this, don't I? But in our next episode, we've got a special episode, and I'm going to talk about 3.5's lasting contribution to the game, The Warforged. And then the episode after that, we're going to talk about some very tall fishmen, the Kna, and some French non-werewolves, the Lupin. All of that right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and don't put any racist caricatures of Polynesian people in your games.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.